Mr. Guest. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Unless you want to open a front door for me.
No, I'm afraid not. But you know my name, but who are you? Just another American who saw too many movies as a child.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Welcome to Lenin Testosterone, the making of the action hero. I'm your host, the action master, Kyle Smith. And today, we're going to be talking about movies. Specifically, the big blockbuster films of the 80s, as well as some continuations of it. Stay tuned for some new interviews. Alright, so we're here to talk about the big action heroes of the 80s. So you saw a lot of movies in your day, right?
Very much so.
Alright, so how did it feel seeing, say, Die Hard or Raiders in theaters when it was brand new?
It was just normal. It was the thing to do. I mean, we didn't have any other way to do it. Like, for example, when I saw Star Wars, I saw it 4 times in a row.
4 times, huh? Yeah, that was back when Star Wars was actually good. But we're not going to talk about that on this podcast. So what made, say, Die Hard so special back when it came out?
It was revolutionary. It was completely different. You'd had all these movies in the 70s that were disaster movies that were kind of all tuned together with one incident. But with Die Hard, it was action all the time, all the way through. So it was very different.
Die Hard, believe it or not, was based on a book. It's also technically a sequel based on the hit novel that later became a movie starring Frank Sinatra, believe it or not, called The Detective. Later on, the author was asked to write a follow-up sequel because the previous movie was such a massive success called Nothing Lasts Forever. It's is and isn't Die Hard at the same time. It has the same basic plot and story structure, but it's a lot darker and more depressing and overall nihilistic. The movie was originally supposed to have Frank Sinatra himself and the main role as John McClane.
Oh, you stupid motherfuckers! No, no!
But of course, he thankfully backed out of it, and eventually it led to Bruce Willis, who wasn't known as an action star at the time.
Cute toy.
But soon proved himself with this movie. What makes John McClane special is that, in essence, he's just an ordinary guy.
He's personable. He's somebody that the reluctant hero, I guess you could say. He didn't really want to be there. He just got caught up in the moment and he did his job.
He's a cop from New York who happens to be in Los Angeles trying to apologize to his estranged wife on Christmas Eve when Hans Gruber and crew barge into Nakatomi Tower and take everyone hostage in a robbery that's not supposed to look like a robbery.
In essence.
Well, you've got the guy who planned the job, the guy who put all the money in the job, the guy who's an obvious narcissist.
You won't hurt me.
Oh, yeah? Why not?
Because you're a policeman. There are rules for policemen.
Yeah.
That did all of that. And then you've got the poor guy that was just stuck there on the weekend trying to see his wife.
This is what leads to the movie. What happens is he has to face these guys alone, armed with only a handgun and whatever he can take off the enemy.
No fucking shit, lady! Do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
This is what makes John McClane the everyman and why the Die Hard film was so successful. In contrast to Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard, where he was like surfing on a jet or something like that, and there's Die Hard 5, A Good Day to Die Hard, which honestly, nobody really knows what was going on in that movie. It was a mess.
Well, and the whole point of that was to keep him more normal, I guess, to be like more like the normal guy versus the Hans Grubers of the world that you don't exactly expect to be married.
In contrast, Indiana Jones is more of the Superman, so to speak. Not Superman as in powers, although he does have a pretty dumbass weakness.
Snakes. Why did it have to be a snake?
Character. Indiana Jones would be a very good subdued example of this, in the sense that he is extremely skilled, very well educated, but learned, and traveled.
I would say that it was very different than your Die Hard, because it was he was seeking something. He wasn't kind of thrown in the moment as much, and there was the finding the treasures and stuff that was really neat, and the way that the cinematography and everything was fantastic on it. Sound effects were off the chart.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to find another movie that really does sound effects that well.
That's true, and you can get the fanciest, nicest surround sound out there, and it's a very old movie, and it's still one of the best sounding ones that there is.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it like who knows how many times. It's just that rewatchable.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of movies now that some of them are rewatchable and such, but that's not really what you're getting right now.
Yeah, I know. And would you say that, say, John McClane and Indiana Jones are kind of like polar opposites, with like John McClane being the everyman with Indiana Jones the Superman?
Yes and no, because still your Indiana Jones is still kind of your everyman, and that's why the character is seen so well by the public, because he's not coming across as some inconsiderate prick.
Unlike, say, his nemesis Belloc.
Very much so.
You could warn them if only you spoke Hovitos.
Yeah, but you could say Indiana Jones is still sort of the hyper-competent action hero. Sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah, that's kind of going to be the theme on this episode. So, what was your favorite big 80s action movie?
It was probably in between Die Hard and Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
Yeah, First Blood Part 2. Movie that is never going to be accused of being too realistic, but you know what? That's part of the fun.
Definitely part of the fun. My father, a Vietnam veteran, said, no, not really realistic, but it was fun to watch.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, Raiders of the Lost Ark, of course, is more of a homage to 30s and 40s and 50s pulp adventure films that Spielberg loved as a child, as well as some other elements like James Bond, as we talked about earlier.
I told you! Don't call me Junior.
Of course, this is why it led to dominate the early 80s box office, because, well, blockbusters were still new, and this was a cool concept. It's a very inventive film with lots of big action stunts followed by well-paced, well-crafted scenes in between. Even when it's not fighting, there's still something to see in the movies. We're going to wrap this up by talking to a Gen Zer about what I believe is the modern successor to the traditional action hero, the John Wick franchise. Now, John Wick began in 2014 with the self-titled movie about an ex-mafia hitman who ends up taking up the entire Russian mob because the mob boss's son broke into his house and killed his dog. Joining me is my friend Bryce. So, how are you doing?
Good.
All right. So, you remember John Wick back when it was brand new, which wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
Tell me how it felt.
It felt different. It wasn't the superhero movies like that were out at the time and been out and being made for the past 5 years before that.
Yeah, you could say that it was a bit of a change. Would you say that the series sometimes tests your suspension of disbelief?
Well, yeah. When you're making a movie in action genre, you have to push the limits of the physical boundaries of what can be done.
Would you say that John Wick went a little too much with it at times, though?
Definitely, they went with it at times. Like, if there were a multiverse or something like that, why would there be police officers are running around with a bunch of assassins? And how would they keep that on the down low with the normal people in the universe?
I don't know about if there's a John Wick multiverse, but okay. So would you say that the series escalated a bit from the first movie?
Oh yeah, it definitely did, but that's the only way you can go in action movies. You've seen a bunch of action movies where the second one is a lot worse than the first, and that's because they didn't escalate.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Matrix Reloaded's problem was it didn't escalate. You know what scene I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, would you say that this is sort of the spiritual successor to the classic action film?
Which action film? Because a lot of them it would not be.
Like the original ones, like the typical stuff you see of like the 80s and 90s.
80s and 90s? Well, yeah, this would be a successor to it. Definitely, there's 70% of the movie's action, so yeah, it's definitely...
Probably a little more than 70% if you think about it.
Well, yeah, but you cut out time for breaks and talking, it's around that.
Okay, so, Okay, so what would you say the best aspect of it is?
Best aspect of the movie?
Yeah, John Wick.
The fact that they pulled it off for 3 movies.
4 now, actually.
4 movies now.
Yep.
Honestly, in the beginning, I wasn't expecting it to last this long, but I'm glad that it did.
Yeah, after the first movie came out, you didn't think there was going to be a sequel.
Especially after the new Matrix movie came out and it wasn't that good.
Yeah, that was a...
When you make a movie based off one actor, a whole franchise based off that one actor, and one of his other movies, projects goes down, it doesn't look that good for that actor.
Well, back before Marvel, it used to be all about the actor.
Yeah, I'm glad they bring that back, but sometimes they bring it a little too far.
Yeah, sometimes they could kind of test it. I didn't really make it past like 15 minutes into Matrix 4, whatever they called it.
Who knows?
And that is that. Thank you for listening to Lead and Testosterone, the Making of an Action Hero. All audio content was used for educational purposes only. Please don't sue me. Music is credited to bensound.com. Thank you.